to do.
If the Senate police have come back to order. There we go. Messages from the House.
February the 23rd, 2011, from the House of Representatives. Message, third reading passed. Mr. President, the bill listed below passed the House on third reading by the vote indicated. Senate File 62, Large Project Funding. Aye 42, noes 14, excused 4. Senate File 65, Animal Remedies. Ayes 56, excused 4. Senate File 115, DUI, Child Endangerment Fines. Ayes 54, noes 1, excused 4. February the 23rd, 2011, from the House of Representatives, message number 382, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 9, Economic Analysis. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 47, noes 7, excused 4. House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by a message number 383, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 10, Protection of Livestock Animals. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 47, noes 7, excused 4. The House respectfully asks Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. From the House, February 23rd, 2011, from the House of Representatives, message number 384, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 55, Subdivision Perimeter Partition Fencing. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 55, noes 1, excused 4. House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. February the 23rd, 2011, from the House of Representatives, message number 389, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 73, Municipal Solid Waste Landfills. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 53, noes 3, excused 4. The House respectfully asks Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. February the 23rd, 2011, from the House of Representatives, message number 388, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 119, Real Estate Brokers and Salesmen Revisions 2. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 55, noes 1, excused 4. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. February the 23rd, 2011, from the House of Representatives. Message number 390, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 146, Teacher Accountability Act. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 52, noes 4, excused 4. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
With that order of business, reports from standing committees.
February the 22nd, 2011, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 215, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Hastert, Nicholas, Peterson, Von Flader. No, Senator Meyer, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
And we have a concurrence. Senator Geis, are you ready for message number 383?
Yes, I am. Senator Emmerich, I'll bring this over to you. You don't need to find yours.
Would you go ahead and read it
in? Mr. Chairman, Mr. Vice President,
We need to read it in first.
Okay.
February 23rd, 2011, from the House of Representatives, message number 383, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 10, Protection of Livestock Animals. Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 47, noes 9, excused 4.
Senator Geis.
Mr. Vice President, I move message 383 be in Senate File 10 and ask you to vote aye to concur on this message, and I'll yield the floor to Senator Emmerich to explain the bill.
Senator Emmerich.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. The concurrence is 2 pages in length, but it actually does a lot for this bill, and the fact that it narrows the focus down. Pardon? Oh, you've already moved, have you not, Senator?
Okay.
I'm just here for explanations. It's redefining the protection of livestock animals, and probably the most important thing for the Livestock Board, quite honestly, is the very second page, page 9, line 22. Strike animals and insert as defined, Wyoming Statute 1129.10. That removes the statement that the Livestock Board is in charge of every living dumb creature in the state of Wyoming. And this is actually taking us with 2 cruelty bills, if another one will pass, over in the House, to define livestock animals and pet animals and deal with cruelty in both. This one defines just livestock animals, and I have to admit that I believe that the other House did us a favor on this one. They made it a little more readable and a little more succinct, and ties everything into Title VI for taking care of definitions, things of that sort. So I really think this is a pretty good bill, and I urge you vote aye on this.
Any questions or discussion? There being none, you've heard the motion. The motion is the Senate do concur with message number 383, Senate File 10, and you've been asked to vote aye. The Chief Clerk will please call the roll.
Barnard? Bebout?
Excused.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Excused.
Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Emmerich?
Aye.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines?
Aye.
Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon? Martin?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Nutting?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Anderson?
Excused.
Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 27 ayes, 3 excused.
By your vote, you have voted to concur with Senate File 10. I think that's it, isn't it? We have another. Hold on a second. Senator Johnson, are you ready on message number 388?
Yes, I am, Mr. Vice President.
If you'd, Mr. read the bill in, please.
February the 23rd, 2011, from the House of Representatives, message number 388, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate file 119, Real Estate Brokers and Salesmen, revisions 2. Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 55, noes 1, excused 4.
Senator Johnson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Vice President. I move message number 388 to Senate file number 119, Real Estate Brokers and Salesmen Revisions. And I would ask the body to vote aye on this. It looks like they did a lot of work here, but the First Amendment, they caught a commission that should have been changed to compensation. When LSO saw that, they did a word search of the entire statute and found several more. So that's what the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 did, just changed commission to compensation. Amendment Number 2 was the definition of auction. We've always required auctioneers to be licensed if they auction real estate, but it's never been defined. Amendment number 2 defines and is consistent with what is taught in the licensing classes and with what the commission tells auctioneers when they call. So it's a good bill, made a little bit better, but still better, and I would ask your aye vote on this, and let's send her down.
Any discussions or questions? If not, you've heard the motion. The motion is to concur with message number 388 on Senate file 119, and you've been asked to vote aye. The reading clerk would please call the roll.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout excused. Burns? Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe excused. Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Amrick?
Aye.
Esquivel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines?
Aye.
Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Martin?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Nutting?
Aye.
Perkins? Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Von Flatern,
aye.
President Anderson excused. Closing vote. Closing. Vote closed. 27 ayes, 3 excused.
By your vote, you've concurred with Senate file number 119, pursuant to message number 388. Senator Geis, are you ready on message number 384?
I am.
The reading clerk would please read in the bill.
February 23rd, 2011, from the House of Representatives. Message number 384, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate file 55, subdivision perimeter partition fencing. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated. Aye 55, noes 1, excused 4. House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments.
Senator Geis.
Mr. Vice President, I move message number 384 be in Senate file 55. And what they did is cleaned up the language and made it read a little better. This is the subdivision, perimeter petition fences, and new subdivision. On page 2, line 15, delete perimeter fence and insert a perimeter petition fence on any part of the subdivision adjacent to lands of which livestock can be legally run at large. And then on page 2, line 16, after perimeter, they inserted partition, and that's all they did to the bill, and which makes it a little better, and I'd ask you to vote aye.
Any questions or discussions on the bill? If not, you've heard the motion. The motion is that you do concur on Senate File 55, and you've been asked to vote aye. If the chief clerk would please call the roll.
Barnard?
Aye.
Bebout excused. Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe excused. Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Emmerich?
Aye.
Esquivel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines?
Aye.
Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Martin?
Aye.
Meyer? Nicholas?
Aye.
Nutting?
Aye.
Perkins?
Aye.
Peterson?
Aye.
Ross?
Aye.
Rothfuss?
Aye.
Schiffer?
Aye.
Scott?
Aye.
Von Flatern?
Aye.
President Anderson excused. Closing vote? Closing. Vote closed. 27 ayes, 3 excused.
By your vote, you have concurred with on Senate File 55. I think that clears it, doesn't it? Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we're at that order of business. General file.
Vice President, I move that the Senate resolve itself back into Committee of the Whole.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carried. Senator Nutting, if you'd please return to the chair.
Did you get something killed or something?
Committee of the Whole, please come to order. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 230. The reading clerk will read the House bill.
House Bill 230, Eminent Domain Wind Energy Collector Systems 2, an act relating to condemnation, sponsored by Representative Brown. It was referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State and Public Lands and Water Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Driscoll, Emmerich, Geis, and Hicks, Senator Geis, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Geis.
Madam Chairman, I move when the Committee of the Whole rise and report that House Bill 230 do pass. This is the Eminent Domain Wind Energy Collector System Number 2. And all we did to this bill, or all they've done to this bill, has extended the moratorium from 2011 to 2013 on page 2, line 6. And I'm way out of over, I don't know where I'm at on this bill, because I don't know anything about wind energy. But there's plenty of wind in this house, and there's people that can answer it. I'd ask you to vote aye.
Are you ready for the question? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say no. House Bill 230 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 29. The reading clerk will read the House bill.
House Bill 29, DUI Elimination of Right to Refuse Test, and Act Relating to Driving Under the Influence, sponsored by Representative Gingery. It was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Christensen, Excabel, Hicks, and Perkins. No, Senator Byrne. Senator Perkins, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, they do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 29. For an explanation of the bill, I believe we turn that over to the good Senator from Cheyenne, Senator Johnson, if you call on him.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And fellow senators, I've always been disturbed by the fact that people can drive DUI on the roads of Wyoming and refuse a test, usually a breathalyzer test, and get away with it and not be convicted. This bill stops that and requires a test if the law enforcement officer involved decides to have one. We have an implied consent. By driving on our roads, you are agreeing to take a chemical test to determine your level of intoxication after the officer has probable cause to arrest you and you have been arrested for DUI. Under present law, you can refuse. If you refuse, there's no criminal penalty. There's an administrative penalty. You may not drive for 6 months, or if it's the second consecutive or more, for 18 months. Again, driving is a privilege, not a right. Voting is a right. You've agreed to take the test by driving on the roads. The refusal is a problem with the second and subsequent offenses. Teton County sees a 25% refusal rate for the first time. And this is par with national, the national average and the state average. However, in that county, on the second or subsequent offense, the refusal rate jumps to 75%. In Albany County, the refusal rate on second or subsequent is 64%. The state average is 42%. So some of them are lower, some of them are higher. The testing is done through either breath, blood, or urine. The officer picks the first test, breath. If alcohol is obvious, then almost always breath. If no sense of alcohol but driving is still impaired, then he usually asks for the blood or the urine. Now, the Fifth Amendment protects against self-incrimination of oral testimony, not of physical evidence. Schmerber versus California. Yeah. Schmerber? Thank you. Versus California in 1966, the U.S. Supreme Court made clear that blood may be taken without violating the Fifth Amendment. The Wyoming Supreme Court ruled in Van Order versus State in 1979 that blood testing is of a routine and unobtrusive character. We already take blood tests in other crimes. Why does DUI have an exception? So as long as probable cause exists for the arrest, the evidence collection of blood, urine, or breath does not violate the Fourth Amendment search and seizure. The legislature has carved out a special exemption for drunk drivers, and we have the authority to remove that special exemption for these drunk drivers. Under current DUI law, law enforcement is permitted to take a blood sample if the defendant is dead or unconscious, or otherwise in a condition rendering him or her incapable of refusal to submit to the test and is deemed to have given his or her consent. If there was a death or whether serious bodily injury was involved in a DUI crash, the arrestee does not have the right to refuse. We've already said that those in those situations, the test must be taken without a right of refusal or with a search warrant. Almost every time the test is going to be a breath test. A blood test will be rare, but if a blood test is given by statute, it can only be given by a physician, registered nurse, qualified clinical or lab tech, or other person who routinely does venipunctures at the direction of a physician. In this bill, no law enforcement would ever be doing a blood test. Wyoming Statute 316106 provides immunity for those who administer a blood test, so there's no liability on the doctor or a nurse. At this time, Madam Chairman, I would ask the clerk to read in Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1.
Will the reading clerk read Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 29?
House Bill 29, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to engross copy, page 1, line 4.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I would move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 29. What we're doing here, fellow senators, is adding in the warrant process if the DUI driver and law enforcement are a distance away from a community. If you read it, starting on line 15, or if exigent circumstances do not exist upon issuance of a search warrant, and exigent, according to Merriam-Webster, means requiring immediate aid or action. A test of the agency's choice may be administered upon issuance of a warrant, including a remotely communicated search warrant, when reasonable under the circumstance and is provided in this section. A remotely communicated search warrant may be issued upon sworn or affirmed testimony of the peace officer who is not in the physical presence of a judicial officer, provided the judicial officer is satisfied that the probable cause exists for the issuance of the warrant. All communication between the judicial officer and the peace officer or prosecuting attorney requesting the warrant may be remotely transmitted by voice, image, text, or any combination thereof, or be recorded by writing or mechanical, magnetic, electronic, photographic storage, or by any other means. Upon approval, the judicial officer may direct the peace officer or the prosecuting attorney requesting a warrant from a remote location to sign the judicial officer's name on a warrant at a remote location. A remotely communicated search warrant shall be valid only for purposes specified in this section. Then we go on to page 9 and page 12, and let me whip right on over there. Okay. The amendment that goes into page 9, lines 3, is in the implied consent requirements for youthful drivers. A chemical test designated by the agency employing the peace officer may also be administered to a person who refuses to take a test upon issuance of a search warrant, including a remotely communicated search warrant. In page 12, line 16, is the same thing for commercial drivers. And then you go down on the amendment to line 17, page 2. The amendment refuses, the person refuses testing, is administered a test which discloses an alcohol concentration of 0.04% or more by weight of alcohol in the person's blood. The peace officer shall submit a signed statement to the department, and the statement shall contain. So, I know there's another amendment coming up, and I'm going to remain silent on this, but this is a good amendment because it takes care of the warrant problem that a lot of people have had problems with over the years on DUIs out in remote areas. So I stand ready to answer questions and would ask your favorable vote.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you. Madam Chairman, on and for the amendment, this came through Judiciary Committee, and indeed the good senator is exactly right that it was passed out, but there were grave concerns that we had that ultimately the Supreme Court has held in this case, Madam Chairman, that implied consent is the only way that you can obtain this type of information because the legislature has, that's what the legislature has done, and implied consent is the exclusive way to obtain a blood or breath sample. In doing that and extending that to everyone, as the good senator indicated, the fact that now that there would not, and there wasn't, there simply is not the availability, as I understand it, in the law now, because of what the legislature has done in the existing law with respect to implied consent, to do it any other way unless the legislature gives law enforcement the ability to collect it a different way. And that's exactly what this amendment does, is it provides the opportunity for the appropriate check and balance by inserting in the appropriate place a member of the judicial branch to review that and see if there is a probable cause that you could then extract this such a sample from someone who is being charged or considering being charged with driving under the influence. And so that I think this is a wholly appropriate. The one question I would have for the good senator with respect to this is, as I read this on page 1 of the amendment, lines 15 through 17, we're talking about, what we do is we say, we're saying that a person who refuses upon request to submit to the chemical test, that as provided in subsection A of this section, none shall be given except in cases of serious bodily injury or death has resulted, which is existing statute. Or it says, if exigent circumstances do not exist upon the issuance of a search warrant, what do you foresee being the exigent circumstances that may or may not exist? Madam Chairman, that's the concern I have, is just this phrase, if exigent circumstances do not exist, exactly what would that mean, and when would that entail, and when would that grant then the ability for law enforcement to take or to force or potentially even strap a citizen of Wyoming down that has not been convicted of a crime, but to strap him down and take a blood sample without a search warrant? And because that's exactly what this bill does without this amendment. But even with this amendment, if you could explain the phrase, if exigent circumstances do not exist. I'd appreciate it. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I will try. According to Misters Merriam and Webster, exigent means requiring immediate aid or action, which what I would think that in this case says if somebody's hurt badly or if something else is happening. You can probably imagine what an action would be, but requiring immediate aid or action, then you drop everything. And that would be it, and then it would go back to everything's just normal. Now, I'm not in love with it, so I'm going to sit down and ask you to, if we can go on to Standing Committee Amendment, Committee of the Whole Amendment number 2.
Senator Ross.
Madam Chairman. Members of the Senate, I'm going to urge you to pass this amendment, and then I'm going to urge you to pass the next amendment. Folks, with regards to the language that was added in here, with regards to exigent circumstances, I need to tell you and call your recollection to Senate File 19 last year, which was a bill that I was the primary sponsor on, that closed a number of loopholes in the DUI statutes. And one of them was the two-hour rule that was in that bill that we that was a problem in terms of how long after a stop can you admit a sample into evidence. And basically, in that bill, which is now law, in 31.5.233A, or B, or excuse me, D, it says as follows, subsection C of this section shall not be construed as limiting the introduction of any other competent evidence bearing upon the question of whether the person was under the influence, including tests obtained more than 2 hours after the alleged violation. So what I submit to you is I cannot even dream up in my mind any exigent circumstances, particularly when the law, as we amended it last year, closed that loophole. So unless, you know, I've been trying to think of what would be an exigent circumstance where this would give the law enforcement an out. And I can't come up with one. The only explanation I know of is what was rendered by the prime sponsor of this bill in the other house was that they didn't want the judges having to be called at all hours of the night. And my response to that is, that's their job. So I'd urge you to pass this and then move on to the next amendment.
Question.
All those in favor of Senator Johnson's motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 29, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion to adopt standing or Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 29 has passed. Will the reading clerk read Amendment Number 2?
House Bill 29, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2 to engrossed copy, page 3 after line 18.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2 to House Bill 29 and ask that we dispense with further reading of the amendment and ask for your favorable consideration. What this does is exactly what we were talking about. It goes into the amendment by the good senator from Cheyenne on Amendment Number 1 and simply eliminates the phrase, if exigent circumstances do not exist. What this does is that the bill, as now amended, would be that it would the only time that you wouldn't have to get a search warrant is if there's serious bodily injury or death has resulted as a result of the accident, or upon issuance of a search warrant. So those are the two ways that you now get blood samples. And the reason I've done this, I actually talked with a district court commissioner here recently in my county about this very issue, because it was how hard is it? How hard would it be to get a search warrant all hours of the night? And this is a district court commissioner, and they take a rotation and they take turns with the judges on filling out search warrants. He tells me it's a matter of a few moments, that even now that they call up the officer, tells what his probable cause is, that they give that analysis, and if they're satisfied that probable cause exists, they issue the search warrant. Those search warrants sometimes are done by hand and delivered that way. They fax them, they email them. So there's, when you look at this in concert with the two-hour rule that we passed in this body and in this legislature and the governor signed just a year ago, it's just difficult to figure out when those exigent circumstances would exist. And what it does is I think it creates an opportunity for a little bit of mischief from the administrative side of the three prongs we have in government to simply determine, well, you know, if it's inconvenient or if it's otherwise exigent, then we'll just skip that and then we'll deal with it later. And to me, to strap a citizen down and take them, you at least ought to have that check and balance of the judicial branch in that, and that ultimately it shouldn't be left to local law enforcement or local standard from county to county to determine what those exigent circumstances are. And for that reason, I'd ask that you vote in favor of this amendment. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, this is a very nice amendment.
All those in favor of Senator Perkins' motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2 to House Bill 29, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion to adopt the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2 to House Bill 29 has passed. We are back on the bill.
Question.
Senator Christensen.
Madam Chairman, what came to us as a seriously flawed bill has been significantly improved, and I appreciate the good work that's been done by the senators here. I share with you that I had a chance to meet with that with a certain chief of police that is responsible for the safety of a large town at the confluence of I-25 and I-80, and he's totally in support of this. I also had a chance meeting with a young patrol officer the other night, late at night, and explained this to him also, and he was very excited and supportive. So I'd encourage your support.
Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, I rise to ask a question, and I know this is an important bill, and I've been asked questions by a number of constituents at home on it, and frankly, I was unable to answer. And so my question is, okay, we're doing away with implied consent. What happens when somebody flat out refuses? What's the sanction? What, you know, right now, a lot of the people refuse implied consent, and I can't tell, and maybe, Madam Chairman, I'm just a little slow on this, but I can't tell from the bill what happens to the citizen who says, no, I won't.
Senator Burns.
Madam Chairman, I was the no vote in the committee on this bill, and one of the reasons I was a no vote is the answer to the good senator's question. There, you'll see that there is no penalty provision in this bill. The answer is you are taken bodily, and you are taken either to the police department and forced to have held down and forced to have a breathalyzer test, or taken to the hospital and strapped down or physically held down, and your blood is taken. That's what this bill does. That's one of the problems I have with it. Right now, the current law is if you refuse the test, if you refuse to have the breathalyzer or the blood test, and it's your choice, if you are stopped, it's your choice currently to either refuse it, in which case you take the penalty, which the first time is 6 months giving up your license. Second time, a year and a half giving up your license. Now, in my mind, if that's the concern, then you just up those penalties. You make it 1 year that you lose your license, and maybe 2.5 years or 3 years that you lose it the second time. This, to me, seems like a very radical step. Now, no. What we're going to do is if you're pulled over for whatever reason, you know, regardless of what the probable cause is, and then the policeman tries to convince the judge over the phone to issue that warrant, and that amendment was an improvement, you can be physically taken, physically strapped down, and physically have the blood removed. Brings me to my first question. What happens to that DNA? Is that DNA, can that be applied to a cross-reference on other crimes? And if that's the case, why don't we just have everybody submit DNA? I don't see in the bill what happens to that DNA, to that blood. What if you're found not guilty of the drunk driving, but they connect you to something else? Well, some people may say good, some people may say not good. I'm just shocked that the police like this bill. Of course, it makes their job easier. The county attorneys love this bill. The prime sponsor is a county attorney. He's a prosecutor. One of the things that really bothered me about this was the testimony that we had was that the word is going around among the bars. Refuse the test. Don't take the test. Basically, and it was stated, too many people now know the law. Well, I don't know that that's ever a bad thing, that too many people know the law. And so their prosecutions went down. Well, then further testimony was, one of the reasons the prosecutions went down was, this is the statement by the prosecuting attorney. Anytime somebody refuses the test, they don't prosecute. Well, no wonder the number of refusals has skyrocketed. You think that little tidbit of information has somehow slipped by those people who are talking about this and to whom this is an issue? I think this is, frankly, in many ways, has become a self-created problem. Let's make the situation so bad that then we can bring a bill saying, oh, look at all this, all these people refusing this. And then you throw in the sympathy of those family members who had somebody killed by a drunk driver. Mr. Chairman, I think there are too many questions in this bill. And as I said, that's why I'm going to be a no vote on the floor for this. I think it goes way too far, way too quickly. And if we're going to address this as an issue, you do this incrementally and raise the penalties for refusing the test. But the idea of taking our own citizens and forcing them to go into a forcing them into a hospital, strapping them down to take their blood, just doesn't sit well with me.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, and if we look at it now, if this bill goes forward, the people are going to get 90 days. Without it, they get 6 months without their license. And really what we're trying to do is to keep people who drive intoxicated off the road. And so I think this is a bad bill from the standpoint that you're taking people who would be off the road for 6 months, and now you're saying, okay, they're only going to be off the road for 90 days. And in second and subsequent offenses, they're going to be off the road for 18 months. And so, Madam Chairman, I mean, really, let's keep our eye on the ball. Are we trying to protect the safety of the people on the roads and keep people off the roads? Or are we trying to basically just bring up the prosecution numbers so they feel good about their job? So, I think we want to keep people off the road. Now, if we need to increase those, if we need to go to a year on one-time offense, that's a different bill at a different time, or go to 2 years on the second and subsequent offenses, that's a different bill at a different time. But really, do you want people off the road for 6 months or 90 days? That's the question.
Senator Christensen.
Some really good questions have been raised about this. And earlier when I said when this bill came to us, there were some major challenges. And for me, it had to do with the no choice, with that idea of, tying people down. I'll tell you, the amendment, the first amendment we saw today, if you'll go and look at that amendment on line 19, and that's the Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1, 19, a test of the agency's choice may be administered upon issuance of a warrant. That takes that possibility away that you make an officer on the side of the street the judge, jury, and blood collector. It puts that protection and that respect of the system and the individual's rights back in via the issuance of a warrant. And so I think that is the answer that goes to the first question that was raised. It clearly respects the system as we know it today, and it provides checks and balances. And so that was probably one of the biggest hurdles with this bill as it arrived. Now, there was a question that was raised about DNA in our committee. That question was posed, and we had experts from the state testify that the fallacy with that idea is that when you do a test for blood alcohol, the chemicals in the tube, and I believe it's called a gray top, the gray top tube destroy the DNA. In preserving, it's the anticoagulant that preserves the blood for testing in alcohol, or versus the typical blood that is collected for a DNA sample. And so what we were told from the state, the experts, is that you can't recover DNA from blood that has been used for an alcohol test. The six-month versus 90 days question, on the surface, there, that's a great question. But if we think about the people who are your second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, eighth, ninth time DUI arrests and the frequency which they may have driven before they ever get stopped and arrested, we're really talking about people who, due to their addiction to alcohol, due to their impaired judgment, it isn't the loss of their driving privileges that keeps them out of the car. And so just to extend that that time that they're suspended isn't really the deterrent. And so you can suspend somebody for the rest of their life if you so choose, but that doesn't mean they're not going to drive a car when they're drunk and their judgment's impaired. This bill, as amended, does respect the system. It does respect, I think, the laws of the people when they said, we don't want drunk drivers, and so there were a series of laws that came up with that. They're a danger to the public. At the same time, this respects those people who are accused of that crime. I'd encourage your support.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Just a couple of points, just for the edification of the body. With regards to this 90-day versus 6 months, the 90-day is only available on a first offense. And if it is your first offense, then you have the opportunity to get a temporary driver's permit. On an implied consent refusal, there is no ability to get a temporary driver's permit. It's a complete ban of driving for 6 months, and that's just on the first offense. It goes up. There is no temporary driver's permit on a DUI conviction on a second offense or subsequent, and on implied consent, it goes up to a one-year suspension on a second offense. That's just some facts so you understand the current state of the law. The other thing that I want to point out to you is that because of Senate File 19 last year, which I previously alluded to, testing is much broader than just testing for alcohol. It involves any controlled substance now. And the testing in Senate File 19 allows for a chemical test. And that's the actual verbiage that was in Senate File 19. And the chemical test can be for anyone who's impaired for any kind of substance, whether it be marijuana or other drugs or prescription drugs. Now, the question I do not have the answer to is, and although the good senator from Teton County talked about DNA with regard to the alcohol test, I'm not certain on the chemical test if it's not for alcohol, and that's probably something that we may need to get an answer on as this bill moves forward. I will tell you, though, that in my opinion, this bill is a better bill, with not only with this amendment, but it's a much better bill than the other bill that was floating around, which created a crime for refusal. A second crime. This does not create a new crime. It just basically says you don't have the right to refuse, particularly if there's a warrant now. And with technology the way it is and so forth, I don't find that the search warrant thing is going to be that onerous. In fact, I think it's probably going to be the trend. The Supreme Court is looking at e-citations right now. And as we move into greater technology, the quicker these things will occur. And so the policy choice for you is does this constitute an over-encroachment of a police power of the state versus individual rights? That's the real question. When you really boil it down, that is the question that we must decide here today. And ultimately, with this amendment, I think it's a fair compromise and a fair piece of legislation that deserves due consideration.
Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, and I think that's a fair statement of the policy choice before us. And one thing I need to understand before I make that choice is I heard it alleged that under the current circumstances, where somebody refuses, then nothing further happens to him. The prosecutors don't choose to do anything. And I want a little information on that. And if that is accurate, I want to know why. Why is it that those people that refuse aren't prosecuted, don't lose their license? Is there no chance of a criminal sanction? What's involved here?
Senator Ross.
Madam Chairman. Well, I as former chairman of the Judiciary Committee, I've been watching and following this pretty closely. And my understanding of the testimony, although I was not present, in committee. The evidence or that was testified to was in relationship to Teton County. And that in Teton County, which they have a whole host of really good lawyers, I guess, if there's a refusal, they choose not to prosecute. Now, that has not been my experience here in Laramie County. While I'm a... Pardon me?
Personally.
No, thank the Lord. But as an attorney here in this particular jurisdiction, I've had this contract with the city since I started practicing law to do their little public defender DUI kinds of representations in municipal court. And so, you know, I've had a whole slew of these. And it's not been my experience, at least in this jurisdiction, that they choose, that the prosecutor chooses not to prosecute. In fact, my experience has been that's quite the opposite, that there is a whole host of other evidence that can be garnered from the fact situation that can be used to prove a DUI. Certainly the easiest piece of evidence you can have is the test. A test, as technology has moved along, has become quite conclusive. And so certainly, as technology has moved along over the years, you know, they're pretty foolproof. But, you know, you have all of the other evidence that occurs at the scene. You have the questions about driving and how they were driving, whether or not there was an accident, whether or not there was alcohol in the car. More often than not, even with the open container law, thank you, you still find it in the car. Or they open up the door and the guy falls out or can't stand up. Or they do field sobriety tests, gaze nystagmus tests and other tests and counting and whatnot. And now the other thing that most, at least here in this jurisdiction that you see, is videotape. And almost every one of them have videotape now. Well, that's pretty conclusive in and of itself. When you look at some of these things, you go, oh, I wasn't drunk. I'm going, oh, you got a problem. You know. So I hope I've answered the question. There are other means to prove the DUI. The question is whether or not the prosecutor apparently wishes to take on that case. The policy question would be, as alluded to by the good senator from Sheridan, is maybe the better policy is that prosecutors say, the heck with it. If you refuse, we're not plea bargaining, we're not doing anything, and we're going to hit you with the max. They get a different message than what's been circulated apparently in the bars, at least in the testimony that we've heard.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I understand all the things that we just went through on why it would happen, and I think they're all good, but I'd like to have a question answered on the other side. If we're going to stick to the Fourth Amendment and say no unreasonable searches and seizures and no warrant shall be issued unless all of these, you know, probable cause, what if it's not? What if for some reason or other an officer, you know, with his oath or affirmative, you know, the oath or that he comes out there and he, for some reason he thinks, well, this guy is drunk. Maybe he's having a diabetic seizure or something like that. And then he calls in for the warrant and he gets the warrant and they wrestle the guy down and they, you know, like the good senator from Sheridan's description was, and they do all that stuff and he's not. What happens then?
Senator Ross.
If, in fact, they do the test and it determines that he wasn't, they don't have much of a case. I recently had that happen here in Municipal Court Cheyenne. Part of the reason that they hadn't ended up going to the hospital is a whole different ballgame, but they did do all the tests and everything else and proved that the guy was not intoxicated or under any other chemicals. And as a result, the prosecutor dismissed.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And just to follow up on that same point, I mean, ultimately, when it comes down to it, this is exactly why I think that the bill as amended now puts into effect and takes care of those constitutional considerations. This crime is now on a fairly level playing field with almost any other crime, which is if you can have probable cause that you've committed the crime or that the crime was committed in a certain area, well, that's what you do is you go get your search warrant. And so the difference we had before was now almost any other crime you go get a search warrant for, but because of the rubric of implied consent that had been there for a long time, you couldn't get a search warrant. That was not a remedy that was available to you in a DUI prosecution or case. And so now what we've done with this is I believe it's now fairly on par with about any other crime. If you commit a crime, there can be a search warrant. If you commit some form of sexual assault or if you've done something, if there's evidence there, they go get a search warrant. If they can convince the member of the judiciary that there is a probable cause that you were the one that convicted that crime or that was committed on your presence, well, you can get a search warrant. You can come in and searches are invasive. That's exactly why the search warrant is such a vital part of this bill, is because they are very invasive. And without this, even though we have found in some cases there's been some courts that have held that warrantless searches would not violate the Fourth Amendment. With this now, clearly they won't, because we now have that check and balance. We have the administrative enforcement arm of the law who comes up and says we've got probable cause. You've got the check and balance from the judicial branch of government who now looks at that and prevents that officer from abusing that power. If they lie or the facts or the basis on which the search warrant was issued later turn out to be false or they've been misrepresented, then the exclusionary rule says that evidence comes out. If that search warrant was not issued correctly or if it was executed incorrectly, those are all subject to exclusionary rules and that evidence doesn't come in.
Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, and I'm still struggling. You know, this is a bill I think I want to support, but I want to get settled on all the reasons. And what I'm hearing is that under the current circumstances, there are a lot of people who refuse. And the more experience they have with the system, the more of them they refuse. And that says to me that there's some flaw in the current system that makes people think that refusing is a sensible thing to do. And, Madam Chairman, maybe I'm a slow learner, but I haven't yet understood why so many people refuse. What's the flaw in the current system that makes them think that refusing is a good strategy, a successful strategy, when you're accused of one of these crimes?
Senator Burns.
Well, Madam Chair, at least one county of the state, the flaw is if you know that if you refuse it, you're not going to be prosecuted by the same person, by the same office that actually is bringing this bill in the first place. Now, to me, there's something implicitly wrong there. The good majority floor leader was exactly right, although I didn't say it on the floor, but I did say that if you considered this, if your prosecuting attorney considered this to be a problem, you do the exact opposite of what they're doing. You let the word be spread, and you set a few examples that you are, if somebody refuses, you are going to prosecute them. You're going to prosecute them to the full extent, even if they do get off because your case is a little harder without the chemical test or the breathalyzer test. They're still going to be 6 months down the road, $20,000 poor, and probably not going to go out and do that again anytime soon. And you can tell they're going to tell their friends that. As I said, this is almost a setup in my mind. Now the question that still hasn't been answered is what happens to this blood? We heard one explanation that the stuff that's in the test tube, that's in the tube, destroys the blood. But I don't see any limitation in here as to how much blood's taken. We had a health fair down here a couple of weeks ago, of which I got the results. I'm actually healthier than I was last year. Thank you very much. And they put the needle into my arm, into my vein, and because of the test that I had asked for and paid for, they just put the tube out, put another one in, they took three different tubes out. I don't see any restriction here. And I still don't see any restriction in the bill as to what happens to the blood sample, the DNA. That issue, I believe, has been before this legislature this year about the idea of collecting DNA upon arrest. Well, congratulations. You're getting it in this bill.
Senator Esquivel.
The good senator from Natrona County asked what the flaw was in the system, and I think what the flaw is in the system is that for too long, it's been okay to drive around with a bottle of beer. It's been okay to have a beer after fishing. It's been okay to have a beer after hunting. It's been okay to have a beer after a ball game. In our society, it's been okay to drink and drive. And for too long, people have had the assumption that it's a right, that you have a right to drive. And we all know that driving is a privilege. And with that privilege, go certain responsibilities, and one of them is to not drive drunk. And certainly, a search warrant is invasive. A test is invasive. But so is a drunken driver driving down the street. That can be pretty invasive. So I think that's what the system is. We're trying to overcome a tradition of drinking and driving. And I think that's where the flaw is, Madam Chair. Thank you. Honored for the bill.
All those in favor of Senator Perkins' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation for House Bill 29, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 29 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next division. Division being called. All those in favor of House Bill 29, please rise. All those opposed?
Yeah.
House Bill 29 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 138.
House Bill 138, Public Funds Time Deposit Open Accounts Interest Rate, an act relating to public funds, sponsored by Representative Madden. It was referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Barnard, Case, Emmerich, and Hines. No, Senator Perkins, Senator Hines, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Hines.
Madam Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, I move that it does so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 138, and I'll yield to the co-sponsor to explain the bill, Senator Case.
Senator Case.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, House Bill 138 is about the deposit of public funds, and it's a job of the treasurer to fix the interest rate that public funds receive. And right now, that's a fixed rate of interest. And when you deposit on a bank, and we'd like to make that the minimum. That's all this bill does. The gist of the bill is contained on page 2. It's under the section 94804, little B, about surety bonds. And the current language says, contain the further obligation to settle with and pay to the state treasurer for the use of the state interest upon a daily balance on the deposits at the rate fixed by the Board of Deposits, payable quarterly. And now the new language will say, at the agreed-upon rate, which shall not be less than the minimum rate fixed by the Board of Deposits, payable quarterly. And you can see there's very similar language in 94810, which is time deposit open account. And again, there's a Board of Deposits that fixed the minimum rate, fixes the fixed rate. But now it'll be a minimum rate, so that instead of saying the Board of Deposit shall fix the rate of interest to be paid on time deposit open account, it will now say that they shall fix the minimum rate of interest to be paid on the time deposit open account. Time deposit shall be at the minimum rate of interest as fixed by the board or at such higher rate as agreed to by the depository bank. And I'm sure that the chairman of the Appropriations Committee is ready to run in here and testify in favor of this bill. It has the potential of getting us a little bit more money. As you can see, we have gone from fixing a fixed rate to saying, well, this is the floor, and you can do a little better than that if you wish to. I'd be happy to answer any questions that I see here already.
Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Hines' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 138, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 138 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 154.
House Bill 154, Multiple Special Handicap License Plates, an act relating to motor vehicle registration, sponsored by Representative Harvey. It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, Social Services, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Dockstader, Martin, Nutting, Schiffer, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 154 do pass. There were no standing committee amendments. And, Madam Chairman, for an explanation of this good little House bill, I yield to Senator Peterson.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Fellow Senators, House Bill 154 is a bill trying to address a problem that we've had for the past number of years with handicap plates. At present, those that have handicaps are given one set of plates and one placard, and if a family has multiple cars, it becomes somewhat of an inconvenience for that person to try to find the placard if the placard maybe is another vehicle that the wife has in the glove compartment, and they've got the one vehicle out in the driveway that doesn't have a handicap plates on it, then, of course, they're at a disadvantage and can't take advantage of those handicap spots in front of stores and other public places. So this bill is trying to address that problem just by providing the issuance of multiple handicap plates for families that have multiple vehicles. Now, the situation or the problem or the concern might arise that, well, what if abuse happens within the family of now every vehicle has a handicap plate on it, and if the person that's driving is not the handicapped driver and or the member of the family? And the response simply is, and has been on the other side, is that if anybody is more concerned, I guess the question is, who would be more concerned than the family members of that handicapped person of abuse of that situation? And so on page 2, the added language, the county treasurer shall issue a set of plates for each vehicle and a special license plate for each motorcycle registered to a qualified applicant under this subsection upon payment of the required fees. And then, of course, the repealer of Wyoming Statute 312213. And so this is a convenience bill for those that have handicaps, deal with those in their lives, and have multiple vehicles. We're just asking for the opportunity to have each vehicle licensed with a handicap plate. And with that, Madam Chairman, I would stand for questions.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I just have one question. I think it sounds like a good idea, but down in that state that sticks down into the Atlantic and the Gulf, they had a deal several years ago where if you had a rental car, it had a special plate on the rental car, so the crooks could come up behind the rental car and see, oh, that's a guy from out of state, and go beat up on him and take their cameras and all that kind of stuff and make them not want to come to that sticky downstate anymore. Are we kind of putting that same thing on a handicapped car and kind of taking them out and saying, here's a handicapped car, and if we get some of those guys that used to hang out down there in the sticky downstate come up here, do you ever see an unintended consequence along those lines? Other than that, I think it sounds like a good idea, and see what you think.
Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, with this bill, there won't be any more problems than already exists because these people already have a handicap plate, which will go on one of their vehicles, so that if there's a risk, they're already running it. This bill doesn't change that. And frankly, Wyoming has been civilized enough so that there's no evidence that we're having that kind of problem here.
Senator Perkins.
Madam Chairman, and with that coupled with the fact that pretty soon you may be able to carry concealed without a permit, they'd better leave those folks alone.
Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation for House Bill 154, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 154 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 174.
House Bill 174, Designated Transfer of State Lands and Act Relating to State Lands, sponsored by Representative McComey. It was referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture, State Public Lands, and Water Resources. Reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Driscoll, Emmerich, and Hicks. No, Senator Geis. Excuse, Senator Bebout. Senator Geis, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator
Geis? Madam Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, I move House Bill 174 do pass. And I'd also like to have the standing committee read in, and I'll move it.
House Bill 174, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 2.
Madam Chairman, I would move the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, and I'll yield the floor to Senator Bebout.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Member of the Senate, I bring this bill to you on behalf of a community in Fremont County, Lander. A lot of you are familiar up there with the WLRC, Wyoming Life Learning Resource Center, known as a training school. And there's a piece of ground up there that they've owned for many, many years. And we have a situation in Lander where YDOT has outgrown their yard, and they've been looking for a couple of years for a different place to locate. And they've explored north of town, south of town. And the one piece of ground that really makes sense for them to do is this piece of ground that's owned by the WLRC. And in order to try to facilitate this land swap, if you will, or purchase by YDOT from WLRC, we bring this bill to you. And the purpose of the bill, and you'll look at it, we have a legal description, is to allow, and it's allowed under our statutes, that on appraised value that you can sell state lands to another third party. And we talked about this earlier in the session about a piece of ground in Teton County. So, Madam Chairman, we bring this bill to you to allow the WLRC to sell this piece of ground at an appraised price to YDOT for them to be able to build a shop and other facilities there. I will tell you, Madam Chairman, that this particular transaction is supported by the City Council of Lander, their leader group, which is their economic development group. They have public testimony. We've tried to get this thing done for a couple of years. It really makes sense. The WLRC had serious concerns about who, in fact, might be buying that land, and they were very hesitant to sell it to someone else other than YDOT, which will put in their facility for their snow plows, et cetera, and also have their office facilities for driver's license and those kind of things. Madam Chairman, it's really a win-win deal. The WLRC gets to kind of control who gets the land, being YDOT. They get a fair price for the land that they will utilize and put into their system. And YDOT has an opportunity to expand their facilities that they need to do. The other part of this agreement is that YDOT will take their existing yard and, in a negotiated price based on fair market value, sell that to the city of Lander that needs it as well. Madam Chairman, I'll be glad to answer any questions on that particular part. Then I want to speak to the Standing Committee Amendment.
Senator Schiffer.
Is this trust land that belongs to the school? Who is the actual owner of the land? Is it the Life Resource Center, or is it who owns it? As I recall, that's land that was conveyed as part of the Act of Admission, and it belongs to that school and falls under the category of trust ground with all the constitutional protections thereof. But I might be wrong. Maybe this is a separate chunk, because we looked at this a couple years ago, I believe.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. And I guess the other thing I would ask is whether the Transportation Commission has had this before them, whether they voted on it, and whether this is something that's already been proposed in their long-term planning and goals, and whether it's been discussed on that end of the deal.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'll answer the last question first. As I understand it, in the testimony that I participated in meetings, this is something that YDOT, based on a discussion with their commission, is moving along to try to plan for in the future. And in order to do that, they've been looking for a piece of ground, and when the funds are available, they will, in fact, move the project forward and build the facility. As to the school trust land, good question from my colleague from Johnson County. When I worked this and we were involved in these meetings, my understanding was that WLRC could do what we're talking about doing, and they were there and had been represented. I can't answer that question specifically. Maybe my colleague for Fremont County, Senator Case, can tell you that because he participated in this. This is really an issue that he's been involved with more than me. He might be able to answer that question, but I can't tell you for sure. But what I can tell you is that they represented to us that what we were doing was appropriate and it was okay.
Senator Case.
Madam Chairman, this land is some of the land that comes from the Board of Charities and Reform, which benefited the institution. Whether this land actually was a part of the Act of Admission, I don't really think that's necessarily true, but it is in that same land that was administered at one time by our Board of Charities Reform. The proceeds of that land would support the institutions. The sale of this actually goes in the general fund, and we sort of work it out through appropriations. If you remember, members of the Senate, we had a discussion. There was a 300 series amendment that we discussed, and we talked about the permanent land income fund referenced by 94310. You remember that? There was an income fund and there was a principal fund. This land is involved in those funds. So this indeed, in my mind, is land that has a bit of a trust obligation to it, not the same trust as the school sections 36, but that's one of the reasons I support the Standing Committee Amendment that talks about an auction, which I believe has been moved.
Senator Meyer.
And I'm just curious as to whether if the Transportation Commission finds another piece of land that they think more suitably meets their needs, whether this bill locks them into buying only this land, and that would be a question I'd have.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The testimony that I heard, and this comes from people that within YDOT, is that this is the best piece of ground and the only real piece of ground that works for them in Lander.
all the other opportunities they looked at, they had issues with sewer and water lines, they had bad ground, different things. So this is not a situation where they're going to buy this land and later on come back and say we're going to use something else or another site. This is their site based on all the information that I was able to gather from those meetings.
Senator Case.
Madam Chairman, just if we could move perhaps, I know the Standing Committee amendment's been moved, and if I could speak a little bit, then move, we could move into discussion of that. This is a very good piece of ground. It's the best piece of ground available in Lander to develop, quite frankly. And if you've driven through Lander and you've driven from Lander to Riverton, the Life Resource Center, what we used to know as the training school, is on your right-hand side. This land is to the south of that towards the town, and the town has grown out around that area. That's where all the new development is. In fact, there's a very fine bar and hotel that's part of that new development. But it's actually, that's about a half mile away from that land. The land sits just slightly back from the highway. There's a berm that's sort of, you know, that, and the land's up on top of the berm. And there's a triangle of land that's being developed along the highway. It's owned, it's privately owned. And actually, it's being used for a gravel pit right now. But the developer's very clever. He's mining out the gravel to reduce the profile of the berm so that it'll have an appearance from the highway. And it is the finest piece of ground available. And I would like to see it be more generically considered through a public auction process and a public hearing. There has been public meetings about this, but they do not rise to the public hearing that I believe is required by our statute. And I would like to see the opportunity for other ideas to come forward. And frankly, it's just a little bit too closely wound together. There's a direct familial relationship between some of the parties involved. The city of Lander has received a promise to get the land from the YDOT facility, the old facility, a sort of an implicit promise. And I just think all that needs to be kind of put aside, and we really ought to just have an auction and put it above board. Department of Transportation has a legitimate beef in the fact that they bid for some land up by Meteetse to build a similar shop. And that at that time, they were outbid by a ridiculously small amount of money because they felt that they could not bid to exceed the appraised value. And that brings us to the subject of the Standing Committee Amendment, which has been moved. And so I guess it's okay to talk about it, because in the Standing Committee Amendment, you can see that the lines 22 through 25 provide the Department of Transportation with the ability to bid in excess of appraised value if they so desire. So they have that ability. And frankly, we're talking about a multi-million dollar maintenance facility, not necessarily what I think is the best thing to do with the prime land that's available still open in Fremont County, or in Lander, within the city limits. But it's a multi-million dollar facility, and I don't think in the end anybody's going to get too concerned about whether they have to pay $154,000 for this 19 acres or whether it's $206,000. In the end, I don't think that's really going to matter. And it may be more than that, but that market will determine that. It has been discussed that the Life Resource Center and their administration support this sale and to the exclusion of any other arrangement, and that is just not true. With this amendment, and with the lines 38 through on page 1 continuing on, you can see that there's a covenant put on the deed. That deed restricts it to the uses that have been developed in approval with the Life Resource Center administration. They're okay with that. That's exactly what they testified to in the Senate committee. They said they don't care who gets the land as long as its complementary use respects the Life Resource Center. I hope you'll support the Standing Committee Amendment. I think it's just a better, cleaner way for us to go forward in it, and it really does remove any question and there might be any improprieties or anything. I've lived in Lander all my life. This is my district. I know this property, and I know I've watched Lander develop all these years. I think I have a sense, and I'm here to represent that as their senator, I have a sense which might be the best way for the town to grow and this to occur. I hope you'll support the Standing Committee Amendment and then support the bill.
Senator Bevout.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. One of the things that I learned a long time ago is to stay out of local issues, and I find myself right in the middle of this one. I would speak against the Standing Committee Amendment, and I'll tell you why, members of the Senate. First of all, the practicality of it. And think about it. Now, you're going to have the state agency, YDOT, going to an auction to bid against a private sector on a piece of ground. And I don't remember too many times where I've gone to an auction and I have to compete against the state agency to buy that land. If you really wanted to have an auction, you should say YDOT does not have the opportunity to do it and open it wide open and let everybody have that. And then what you'll see probably is that the private sector might buy it. WLRC may or may not get what they want. And ultimately, YDOT does not have a place for their shop. But to do it this way really, I think, flies in the face of trying to do something that's reasonable. And I go to an auction, and I'm sitting there, and I know who YDOT is, and I've been on this piece of ground. And the language is, it says, well, we can go higher than the fair market value. Well, how high is that? So how high does YDOT go? And I, as a person competing against with a state agency, I just think it's just not a comfortable situation. You know, if you don't want this piece of ground to go to YDOT in appropriate manner based on fair market value on appraised value, then I guess you kill the bill and let them figure it out. But to do this way, I just think it doesn't work.
Senator Schiffer.
Madam Chairman, and that's why I asked my original question. And really what I was getting at, whether this ground falls under Article 18, Section 1, which is the institutional trust ground, which is different than school trust ground. If so, it has to be treated different. And I hear it's from Board of Charities and Reform, which is who used to administer the institutional trust ground. That's the ground associated. The university got some, and the state hospital got some. The miners' hospital, I mean, they got some everywhere. It's a different category of ground than anything else. And it sticks in my mind when we looked at the Life Center over there a couple years ago that all of that ground was institutional trust ground. That's how they got it. And if so, it's different than all the rest of the stuff we own. I think it falls under Section 1 of Article 18, in which case we got to sell it by auction. We don't have a choice.
Senator Bebout.
Madam Chairman, I think that's a question that I need to do some further research on, because I'm not going to stand up here and tell you something I'm not sure of. As to the Standing Committee Amendment, I would still ask you to defeat the Standing Committee Amendment, particularly if this is in fact the case and it is trust lands, it's going to go to an auction anyway. But if we're going to do it the other way, it is not trust lands, we can proceed in this manner. Let's be reasonable about it and not have the private sector competing against the state agency bidding on a piece of ground in an open auction.
Senator Driscoll.
I stand in favor of the amendment, and the reason being is that even though it's state agency, these are different pots of money, and these guys operate out of different pots, and you're actually not giving full value back to one piece of a state agency against another one. As far as bidding against one, YDOT does it every day. YDOT acquires right-of-way and pieces of ground every day, with some of it with private sector, some without, but they're used to dealing with that. And I stand that if that's the best site in Lander, and it's what YDOT needs, they've got the budget and they've got the means within their agency to get it. I hate to see us start down this path that we start trading state lands off without getting highest value that we possibly can by a bid mechanism. You know, we've done it twice this section. This is the second time. And it's going to come up again. Pretty soon the city needs something, the county needs something, and we don't want to bid on it. We don't want to do anything. We want to get an appraisal and we want to do it. I think it's a bad path to go down. I say let YDOT, they're big boys, let them stand up, let them raise their arm and bid on it. They've got a budget, and the truth is appraised value is only an estimation of value. The true value is what happens when you have open bidding in an auction. People raise their deal. That's the ultimate appraised value. So I encourage you to stand in favor of it.
Senator Bebout.
Well, Madam Chairman, if that's the case, then what happens if you put the value of the land, the fair market value or the appraised value is $100,000, you read the amendment, it says they shall bid at an amount greater than the appraised value. What if there's no other bids? Do then they have to go in there and bid more than it's worth? And did that, in fact, get somehow involved in not the true fair market value? Because if they're the only one bidding and they're bidding against themselves, now you're asking them to bid more than the appraised value. Is that right?
I represent, if everyone's scared, nobody shows up. Senator
Driscoll.
Excuse me. I represent that if no one shows up to bid on it, that they're probably going to buy it at appraised value plus $1, which probably isn't going to break YDOT. They're obligated by state statute to get appraised value out of it. If it has an appraisal on it, they can't sell it for less. State land, it all works that way. When you put up a piece for sale, it doesn't matter if it brings less than appraised value. You're obligated to pay appraised value. That's on all state land that's sold.
Senator Case.
Well, Madam Chairman, you know, there's just a little bit more to it than a transfer between a couple pieces of agencies, and it's part of the more to it is the fact that, you know, maybe there is another use for that land. I don't know, look at your town. Would you want the best 19 acres that's for the future development, that's internal, it's not out on the edge, because the Life Resource Center forms one of the edges. There's a subdivision wrapping around the other side. There is some agriculture land, still institutional land on the backside. But it's kind of like if you really had your druthers and you could develop your town, and this, would you necessarily think that you'd want a maintenance facility there? And YDOT, they're good operators. It'll be clean. It'll look good. These new maintenance centers look great. But what if somebody has a better idea, Madam Chairman? What if somebody has a different proposal? What if somebody wants to buy the land and redevelop it? I mean, there's things they'd have to do. They'd have to get it rezoned through the city, and the city would be part of that process, and there would be a public hearing and all that. But wouldn't that be a healthy thing? That'd be a good thing for Lander on the last piece of good ground that we have within the confines of the city. I mean, I think this, to me, it's like a no-brainer, because you got YDOT has the chance to do it. I don't see where anybody's hurt on this other than maybe, in the end, YDOT pays a little bit more than appraised value and they get what they want anyway. But in the meantime, a community gets to try to establish its own destiny. They get to participate in a public hearing. We do the right thing for respect to the trust. And I just don't really see the big downside. And I hope you'll join me in kind of letting this process proceed through the following our statutes that exist for the disposition of state land and move forward.
All those in favor of Senator Geis's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 174, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 174 has passed. We are now back on the bill. Question on the bill. All those in favor of Senator Geis's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 174, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 174 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 179.
House Bill 179, Energy Improvement Programs, an Act Relating to Local Improvements, sponsored by Representative Petroff. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Election Political Subdivision, who reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Hines, Johnson, Martin, and Scott. No, Senator Case. Senator Case, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Christensen.
Madam Chairman, without Senator Case here, I'll be glad to move the bill if that works for you.
I accept that, Senator.
Thank you.
And ask that it be read in.
House Bill 179, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 15.
And, Madam Chairman, to explain the bill and the amendment, I'll yield to Senator Christensen.
Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Members of the Senate, House Bill 179 is a bill relating to local improvements authorizing the adoption of an energy improvement program by a local government as specified. It describes and provides for financing, the procedures, and the effective date. If we could dispense of the amendment first to get that out of the way, referring to the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, Madam Chairman, I'd ask for the positive vote on that.
Any further discussion on the amendment?
It's been written.
All those in favor of Senator Hines' motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 179, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 179 has passed. We're back on the bill.
Madam Chairman, members of the Senate, if I could just direct your attention to the bill, just touch it briefly, and then go to the information sheet you have. On page 2, there's some updated language. On page 13, under the terms of project, line 9, it says a project may also mean an energy improvements program. On line 12, energy improvements program means a program authorizing energy efficiency or renewable energy improvements in a program adopted by a municipality, county, or joint powers board. And then on to page 3 and 4, rather than read to you all of 3 and 4, if I could move this along. Last night at the UW Energy Program, we talked about energy conservation and how it is a low-hanging fruit and that there are large opportunities in our communities, both the community I come from and other communities in Wyoming, to help business and individuals to do those cost-effective repairs. It can be fairly expensive in the short term with a high return in the long term. The information sheet that was handed out to everyone, the top of it says, please support SF-179. I could draw your attention to that, and we'll work off of that. Just hitting on some of the points of it, so I'm not reading to you, to everyone. It is a simple, narrow-purpose bill to allow towns, counties, and joint powers boards to establish, fund, and operate energy conservation programs. And then dropping down to what it really does, this is probably the meat of this, and it's a little to read this next, the second half of page 1. It really talks about what this bill does. On page 3 of the bill, it does four things. It starts on page 3 and goes into page 4. It sets up that the local government can designate an energy improvement area and establish an energy improvement program. Number 2, the local government can loan funds to the property owner to do those cost-effective improvements, and a loan is secured, how that loan is secured. And then 3, this allows the local government to create that loan application process, set terms and interest. And then on 4, they can charge fees for the administrative cost of it to cover the cost of the loan and to cover the cost of delinquency. A key point here is no public funds will be used to cover these costs. And then over on the next page, it actually gives you a little more information on that. And I just wrap up this part of it with saying this 179 is a very, it's important to some of the communities. It allows us to set up programs for communities that are facing increasing energy costs, and it gives us a way to deal with that. And it is that public-private partnership where government is able to assist on a voluntary basis the citizens in addressing what's coming as far as increasing rates. And I'd stand for questions.
Are you ready for the question? Senator Bebout.
Madam Chairman, one question. When you loan this money, how will it fit in the scheme of things when they already have a first mortgage, maybe a second mortgage? Will it be third mortgage then, or will there be some way of having? I just want to understand, be sure I understand the priorities.
Senator Christensen.
Quoting a wise senator that spoke a few minutes ago, I'll not be saying things I don't understand. However, one of the mechanisms for recovering this, and when we talk about the loan guarantees and the liens, there's been talk about a cooperation with the local electrical companies when they address the decrease in the fees based on the quality of the improvements, that there is an addition in the electrical fee to help recover that. And so there's some opportunities here to make it a fairly safe and a investment or a return way to get that return back. But as far as the order of the lien, I don't have that. I'd be glad to find out for you, though.
Senator Hicks.
Madam Chairman, just a question for the sponsor on here. At some point in time, it seems to me like I recollect, isn't there a provision that prohibits state and local governments from lending money to private individuals? And if are you aware of that, and could you speak to that issue?
Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, we discussed that at some length in the committee because we're well aware of Article 16, Section 6 that has that prohibition. My understanding is that what's involved here is the traditional industrial revenue bond where the public money is not at risk. And since you don't have public money at risk, 16.6 doesn't get in your way.
Are you ready for the question on the bill? All those in favor of Senator Hines' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 179, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House Bill 179 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 252. The reading clerk will read the House bill.
House Bill 252, Review of State Executive Department Positions and Act Relating to the Administration of Government, sponsored by Representative Harvey. It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, Social Services, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Dockstader, Martin, Nutting, Schiffer, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Madam Chairman, I move from the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with the recommendation that House Bill 252 do pass. There was a standing committee amendment. I ask it be read in at this time.
House Bill 252, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to engross copy, page 3, line 3.
Madam Chairman, I move adoption of the standing committee amendment. Madam Chairman, what the bill is about, it's a review of state executive department positions, really trying to figure out which ones are appropriately at will that might turn over with an administration or might turn over as the need arises due to performance, and which are appropriately strictly civil service positions. One of the things, Madam Chairman, that you have to watch out for, at least in the area with the agencies that are in Committee 10's jurisdiction, is you're dealing with a lot of federal funds in the Fed service positions, and as is simply say in this study that we're going to consider any federal requirements for positions and programs that are partly federally funded. Madam Chairman, I urge adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment and be happy to answer any questions on it.
Question. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 252, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 252 has passed. We're back on the bill. Senator Scott.
Madam Chairman, to explain the bill. What this is a bill that comes to us at the request of our new governor. As he's coming in, he wants to have a look at the various state government positions to see which are appropriately at will. I think they were a little surprised in some areas, particularly in some of the departments that are in the normal jurisdiction of Committee 10, particularly I think the Health Department, at how few at-will employees there really are. And if you have management problems, how few you can turn over to bring in your own team. And the governor wants a quick review of that. The review will be conducted by ANI internally, so there's no need for an additional appropriation here. They intend to do it in a fairly quick time frame. You can see the various things that you have to look at. You know, what's the knowledge and skills in the position? How does it work in the organization structure? Is it supervisory? You have to look at a timeline. You can recall some of the discussions we had earlier on this floor where there may be some rights if you shift a position from being civil service to at will. You need to take that into account properly. With the amendment, you need to look at the federal questions. Madam Chairman, I think it's an entirely appropriate exercise for a new governor, and one that's particularly important in my committee's jurisdiction because of the known problems we've got. We've discussed them a number of times in the Health Department, but it's broader than that. It's a government-wide that does contemplate that there probably has to be legislation. It involves Labor Committee. It involves Appropriations Committee because there may well be an appropriation involved before we're done. Madam Chairman, that's a quick summary of the bill. I would hope that we would pass it because, you know, the people are going to hold the governor responsible for the performance of the executive branch. And he needs to have the flexibility to get the kind of management that he needs to produce the results that people are expecting. So I think this is something probably should have been done 8 years ago, but it certainly needs to be done now to have a good, hard look at it and a careful look, because you don't do these things just willy-nilly because there are some rights involved. You may have to basically offer people some compensation for giving up some of their civil service rights, or you may have to implement some changes gradually. There's a number of ways to approach it. So with that, Madam Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions. Question.
All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 252, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 252 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 253. Senator Jennings, will you assume the chair?
House Bill 253, Wyoming Nurse Practice Act Amendments, an act relating to nursing, sponsored by Representative Kasparek, was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Dockstader, Martin, Nutting, Schiffer, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman.
You heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure, Senator Scott?
Chairman.
Chairman, I move when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with a recommendation that House Bill 253 do pass. There were no standing committee amendments, and for an explanation of this good little House bill, I yield Senator Nutt.
There is a standing committee amendment.
One moment, please. You have a standing committee amendment?
Look on the back. I've read it.
Okay. Senator Nutting.
This is a simple bill. It allows for nurses who have been inactive in nursing and have allowed their licenses to lapse, that they can attend a educational program to restore the requirements so that they can then be relicensed. This has been increasingly important as our economy has made other jobs sometimes not lucrative, and nurses have wanted to return to nursing. So this allows that they can attend a program of study, meet qualifications to have their license returned to them, and then be reemployed in nursing. And I stand for any questions.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I apologize. I missed that there was a standing committee amendment. I ask it be read in at this time.
House Bill 253, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 1.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. Mr. Chairman, the Standing Committee Amendment removes such evidence that your committee chairman was trained by Representative Hansen. It's something that needs doing.
Questions on the amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment of House Bill 253, please say aye. Opposed, nay. The Standing Committee Amendment has passed the Committee of the Whole. Back on the bill. Question being called. All those in favor of House Bill 253, passing Committee of the Whole, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. House Bill 253 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 254.
House Bill 254, Property Taxation Appeals. An act relating to property taxation, sponsored by Representative Throne. It was referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Barnard, Case, Emmerich, Hines, and Perkins. Senator Hines, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Hines.
To county boards. It is mainly directed, as I understand, towards county boards, but so it's consistent, it is also put in the statute that appeal, that is the State Board of Appeals. And what it does is, whenever a board of equalization authorized by this section, the taxpayer may present any credible evidence, including expert opinion testimony, to rebut the presumption in favor of a valuation asserted by the county assessor. And then the bills, the new part would say, the board shall make specific finding and conclusion as to the evidence presented. Apparently, there was some concerns that a lot of times information was given to the Board of Equalizations, and they didn't always follow all the evidence that was presented, and this just gives them instructions that they shall make those finding and conclusion as to the evidence presented. I ask you for your support on House Bill 254.
Question.
All those in favor of Senator Hines' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation for House Bill 254, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 254 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 255. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 255, Veterans Tax Exemption, an act relating to taxation and revenue, sponsored by Representative Patton. who has referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Barnard, Case, Emmerich, Hines, and Perkins. Senator Hines, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Hines?
Madam Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it does so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 255. There is a committee, standing committee amendment. I'll move that amendment and ask it be read in at this time.
House Bill 255, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 15.
Madam Chairman, to explain the bill and the amendment, I'll move to the Senate sponsors, Senator Schiffer.
Senator Schiffer.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Madam Chairman, and we've got the Standing Committee read in. And I'll move the standing committee, and I'll work both at once. Madam Chairman, what this bill does, if you get a veteran's exemption, you actually remain a veteran. I mean, your status doesn't change. You either are one or not. And once you put in your DD-214 and you're declared a veteran, you're eligible for the veteran's exemption. And, in fact, you're eligible until you run out of it, which is a monetary concern, not because you cease being a veteran. So what this bill does, it says that you'll remain qualified for the veterans tax exemption, and you can do that by just contacting your assessor's office by telephone or other communication method on or before the fourth Monday in May to confirm that you're still there and you're still claiming the exemption, rather than having to go in person and sign that, the form, the affidavit, and showing your DD-214. It simplifies it. It simplifies the work in the assessor's office. And particularly as veterans get older and less competent at moving around and things like that, it's very much appreciated being able to use the phone to do this. So it adds efficiency, stability, and ease for your veterans. I would ask I'll take any questions. The Standing Committee Amendment goes in and clarifies, rather than he, we use the distinguished word, the claimant. And I would ask for the question on the Standing Committee Amendment.
All those in favor of Senator Hines' motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 255, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. We are back on the bill.
On the bill, Madam Chairman, I'll try and field any questions except ones concerning conflict.
All those in favor of Senator Hines' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 255, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House Bill 255 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 87.
House Bill 87,
House Bill 87, Obsolete Laws, General Revision, an Act Relating to the General Revision of Laws, sponsored by the Management Council. It was referred to Committee Number 12, Rules and Procedures, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, Hastert, Martin, Nicholas, and Ross. Senator Anderson, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Ross?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, it do so with a due pass recommendation on House Bill 87, Obsolete Laws, General Revisions. As you can tell, this bill is brought to you by Management Council. For the past 3 years, we've been going through our laws and looking at archaic and obsolete provisions to bring our statutes up to date and to get rid of some of the conflicting provisions that may have been ruled unconstitutional and or no longer viable, given old dates and so forth that are in statute. I will tell you that I've been advised by our LSO attorneys that should you have a problem or want to amend any part of this bill, you should simply remove the portion of that bill because there are other conflicting things that can happen rather than seeking to amend it. So shortly to go through this bill, I would also tell you that most of these have been vetted by some sort of standing committee also. So, for instance, in Section 1, you see provisions that have been affected by court decisions, the provisions that have been held to be unconstitutional. These particular sections were vetted through the Judiciary Committee. Part of it was in terms of jurisdiction. What we've done in this particular area is talk solely about jurisdiction in state court because we can't conflict with federal court, and so that's what has happened. On page 2, you see issues concerning debtors and their inability to pay a fine. We don't have a debtor's prison in it, and these provisions were vetted through the Judiciary Committee. Section 1, provisions affected by court decisions, other constitutional questions on page 3. Those are 28.1.111 deal with separation of powers issues. It deals with the prosecuting attorneys and basically we can't tell them who they can prosecute or not. With regards to 28.1.111, we just modified that to providing officer of the body can apply to the district court for a subpoena to appear or to testify. Section 2, these provisions are obsolete and fully executed. They deal with obsolete dates. And that takes us over to Section 2, provisions which are obsolete in the legislative process. Basically, these provisions that are being stricken are not how we do business anymore with regards to LSO and how they do things. Those provisions are simply cleanup brought to us by LSO. On the page 8, with regards to the creation provisions that are obsolete, organization of LSO and LSO duties, some more of that, similar kinds of amendments. On page 10, we don't do CPA audits any further. Provisions which are obsolete, Section 2, subparagraph D, or other archaic references. We amend fermented liquors on page 11. It's actually wine. That's what it is now. With regards to computation of mileage, we don't do that. It's not used anymore. We don't use railroad miles. We use highway miles. Incorrect citations or failure to update cross-referenced provisions, Wyoming internal citations. These are all just citations that are inaccurate or because of changes in the law as they've moved along. We're simply changing some of the references to certain statutes. With regards to Section 4, authorization for legislative service office to delete obsolete date references, compile such laws and so forth. They do that. It's when it's now published, we have a contract with Mickey to do all of that. So House Bill 87 is just simply archaic and cleanup, and I'd urge your favorable consideration.
Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Ross's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 87, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. House Bill 87 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 243.
House Bill 243, Human Remains Training of Search and Rescue Dogs, an act relating to human remains, sponsored by Representative Crone. It was referred to Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Dockstader, Driscoll, and Escobel. Senator Burns, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Coe.
Well, Madam Chairman, I would call on the chairman of Committee Number 6 to actually move the bill. I'm not sure he's tracking that we're on this bill, but he's about to.
Senator Burns.
Well, Madam Chairman, I had forgotten that this was a Number 6 bill. I thought it was a Number 1 bill. And although I've been referred to as a Number 2 quite often. Madam Chair, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 243, Human Remains Training of Search and Rescue Dogs. There are no standing committee amendments, and to give a further explanation of this bill, I ask that you call on the good senator from Cody.
Senator Coe.
I'll be okay, Madam Chairman. You know, Madam Chairman, House Bill 243, we have a very active and aggressive search and rescue unit up in Park County, up in my town, and as a matter of fact, they do train dogs, and they've been used all over the state. They were used in Fremont County on some of those plane accidents. They've been used up in the Bighorns. What this bill does, it just provides for search and rescue certified type people to be able to access human remains for the training of these dogs when it comes to the scent. And if you look on page 5 of the bill, that's really key to it. In paragraph 354607, who may have bodies or parts of in possession, and it inserts the language, any person certified by a state or local law enforcement agency to train, search, and rescue animals. That's all the bill really does. We had a pretty good discussion in committee, but it's, you know, these are volunteers that go out there, and these people that train these dogs need to be able to train them with the human scent being visible. So, with that, I'd ask that you support the bill. I think it's a pretty clean little bill. It's a white copy from the House. That's very unusual.
Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Burns' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 243, please say aye. Opposed, no. House Bill 243 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 107. The reading clerk will read the House bill.
House Bill 107, Municipal Court Jury Trials, an act relating to jury trials in municipal court, sponsored by Representative Botten. It was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, Christensen, Escobel, and Perkins. Excuse, Senator Hicks, Senator Perkins, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Perkins?
Thank you. Madam Chairman, I move that when the committee whole rise and report that do so with a favorable recommendation on House Bill 107, Municipal Court Jury Trials. For the explanation of the bill, I ask that you call upon the good Majority Floor Leader, Senator Ross.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I move that when the committee of the whole rise and report do so with the due pass recommendation on House Bill 107, Municipal Court Jury Trials. Folks, this bill is brought to you to reflect really the current practice in municipal court with regards to jury trials. And so it's a simple bill, but basically what it provides for is that there is no right to a jury trial except when you're talking about driving under the influence, which is already the way they practice, and or when there are situations where the offense for which they're charged alleged to have violated provides for incarceration as a possible punishment. Most of the municipal court offenses aren't subject to incarceration, but those where you could be incarcerated or those DUIs and so forth do provide for jury trials. The current statute doesn't reflect the current practice, and that's all this bill does is to outline current practice in municipal court.
Are you ready for the question? Senator Jennings.
Just a short question. Madam Chairman, in suits at common law where the values in conservation exceed $20, have we figured out how to get around that?
Senator Ross.
Madam Chairman, with regards to suits and in over $20, you're talking about civil suits, and municipal court does not handle civil lawsuits, simply criminal suits. And so that's all that this pertains to.
All those in favor of Senator Ross's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation of House Bill 107, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 107 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Senator Ross.
Madam Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
All in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
The motion has passed.
Yeah, we did. That's my
idea. Reading clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. President, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general files, begs leave to report as follows. House Bill 100, do pass. House Bill 152, do pass amended. House Bill 230, do pass. House Bill 29, do pass amended. House Bill 138, do pass. House Bill 154, do pass. House Bill 174, do pass amended. House Bill 179, do pass amended. House Bill 252, do pass amended. House Bill 253, do pass amended. House Bill 254, do pass. House Bill 255, do pass amended. House Bill 87, do pass. House Bill 243, do pass. House Bill 107, do pass. Senator Nutting, Chairman.
Senator Nutting.
Mr. President, I move for the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. That motion is carried, and that report has been adopted. Messages from the House.
February the 23rd, 2011, from the House of Representatives, message number 394, concurrence passed. Mr. President, the House did concur on Senate amendments to the bills listed below by the vote indicated. House Bill 81, vacant land, ayes 54, noes 2, excused 4. House Bill 246, National Guard disposal of land. Ayes 56, excused 4. February the 23rd, 2011, from the House of Representatives. Concurrence failed. Mr. President, message number 391, concurrence failed. Mr. President, House Bill 8, Wyoming Traditional Food Act. The House failed to concur on Senate amendments to the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 0, noes 55, excused 1, absent 1. The House requests the Senate appoint a conference committee number 1 to meet with a like committee from the House to report recommended amendments to the bill for final consideration by both houses. Concurrence failed. House Bill 20, Medicaid Reimbursement of Services. The House failed to concur on Senate amendments to the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 0, noes 56, excused 4. Message 393, concurrence failed. Mr. President, House Bill 50, Health Insurance Exchanges. The House failed to concur on Senate amendments to the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 0, 50, noes 56, excused 4. Message number 395, concurrence failed. Mr. President, House Bill 88, Guides and Outfitters. The House failed to concur on Senate amendments to the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 0, noes 56, excused 4. The House requests the Senate appoint a conference committee number 1 to meet with a like committee from the House to report recommended amendments to the bill for final consideration by both houses. February 23, 2011, from the House of Representatives, message 397, Joint Conference Committee report adopted. Mr. President, Senate File 128, Health Care Freedom. The House adopted the Joint Conference Committee number 1 report on the bill listed above by the vote indicated. Ayes 48, noes 1, excused 11. February the 23rd, 2011, from the House of Representatives, message number 398, conferees appointed Joint Conference Committee number 1. Mr. President, the Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with a like committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to House Bill 8. The House conferees are Representative Semlich, Chairman, Representative Moniz, and Representative Wallace. February the 23rd, 2011, from the House of Representatives, message number 399. Conferees appointed Joint Conference Committee number 1. Mr. President, the Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with a like committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to House Bill 20. The House conferees are Representative Harvey, Chairman, Representative Gingery, and Representative Shepperson. Message number 400, conferees appointed, Joint Conference Committee number 1. Mr. President, the Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with a like committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to House Bill 50. The House conferees are Representative Gingery, Chairman, Representatives Edmund and Harvey. Message number 401, conferees appointed, Joint Conference Committee number 1. Mr. President, the Speaker appointed House conferees to meet with a like committee number 1 from the Senate on amendments to House Bill 88. The House conferees are Representative McComey, Chairman, Representative Childress, and Stubson. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Concurrences? Senator Bebout, are you ready in regard to message number 389, Senate File 73? The reading clerk will read that message in, please.
February 27, 2011, from the House of Representatives, message number 389, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 73, Municipal Solid Waste Landfills. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form, as follows by the vote indicated. Ayes 53, noes 3, excused 4. The House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Go ahead, Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move the concurrence for message number 389 to Senate File 73, Municipal Solid Waste Landfills. And members of the Senate, this was a good bill to the left here, and actually the House made it a little bit better. I'll go through the amendments very quickly with you, Mr. President. On page 4, lines 11, 12 through 14, they deleted. It's a cleanup amendment, and the language reads better with that in there. They took out. It was kind of duplicative, so they removed that language. Mr. President, on page 5, they went in with a definition for the instead of we had in there naturally occurring contaminants, they put in a definition of that. It's a good definition. Mr. Chairman, if you go on to page Or, Mr. President, if you go on to page 10, line 5, what they did is they wanted to clarify the definition section to be sure that it specifically dealt with municipal solid waste landfills. And if you look at second reading amendment number 1 to the bill, you can see where they, on lines 5, they deleted after 3511103, which was the existing definition sections, and made a separate one called section H, which says specific definitions applying to municipal solid waste, and then they renumbered as you went through them. Mr. President, on the back page, the only other thing they did was they added a definition under the aquifer, and if you look at the second reading amendment number 2 and then third reading amendment number 1, it will read like this: which is capable of yielding to wells or springs which produce a sustainable volume of more than 0.5 gallon per minute. Mr. Chairman, Mr. President, I would ask the body to vote aye.
Any discussion? The motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 73. You've been asked to vote aye. Chief Clerk, please call the roll.
Barnard?
Aye.
Beepout?
Aye.
Burns?
Aye.
Case?
Aye.
Christensen?
Aye.
Coe?
Aye.
Cooper?
Aye.
Dockstader?
Aye.
Driscoll?
Aye.
Emmerich?
Aye.
Esquibel?
Aye.
Geis?
Aye.
Hastert?
Aye.
Hicks?
Aye.
Hines?
Aye.
Jennings?
Aye.
Johnson?
Aye.
Landon?
Aye.
Martin?
Aye.
Meyer?
Aye.
Nicholas?
Aye.
Nutting? Perkins,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Ross,
aye.
Rothfuss,
aye.
Schiffer,
aye.
Scott,
aye.
Von Flatern,
aye.
President Anderson.
Aye.
Closing vote. Closing vote closed. 30 ayes.
By your vote, you have concurred on Senate File 73. Senator Nicholas, are you ready in regard to message number 390 having to do with Senate File 146?
Mr. President.
Would reading clerk read that in at this time, please?
February the 23rd, 2011, from the House of Representatives, message number 390, concurrence requested. Mr. President, Senate File 146, Teacher Accountability Act. The Senate file listed above passed on third reading in an amended form as follows by the vote indicated.
Go ahead, Senator.
Ayes 52, noes 4, excused 4. House respectfully asks the Senate to concur by adopting the listed amendments. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk.
Go ahead, Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move concurrence message number 390 to Senate file 146 and ask the Senate to vote no. The folks, if you go through the changes, this is the Teacher Accountability Act, and there were a couple changes that the House proposed that, frankly, are okay. And then there are a variety of them that I would say are representative of too many cooks in the kitchen. And when you begin to look, for example, if you're looking at your bottom of the first page of the concurrence report, a member wanted to address the issue of suspension without pay, so that they're trying to say is there ought to be a mechanism to suspend without pay under certain circumstances, but they've got the role of the board confused with the role of the superintendent. They've got the timing. There's no timing provision, so I assume you could commence this process and then take forever and never have a hearing on it, let the investigation go on for years. It's a concept that probably deserves some attention, but I'm not sure if we can complete it in this session without further review. We had talked about providing notification about non-performing teachers by the superintendent to the board. They've expanded that to require notification of all teachers so that if you're a large district, superintendent's going to be spending a substantial amount of time just providing reports. I think we need to address that. There is some due process provisions that were appeared to be in and then taken out again. They need to be reviewed. And with respect to the tenure, the House attempted to adjust the 10-year to a 4-year period. The problem with that is, as you tie this into it, you got to remember that if you're a non-tenure track, you've got a different status of review. The long, and part of what we want to do is move teachers quickly to the 10-year or in the 3 years and make sure they've met the requirements, and now you extend it 1 year. So if you have a bad teacher, it seems to me they may be hanging around for an extra year. That's something that we need to take a look at. So the variety of amendments, they on the hearing provisions on page 9 of the original bill, they took out some due process rights under certain circumstances that would require modification to contracts, so we need to find out more what they had in mind. So they've got a few things in here that simply need work and attention, so I'd urge you to vote no.
Any discussion in regard to the motion? Seeing none, the motion is that the Senate do concur on Senate File 146. You've been asked to vote no. Chief Clerk will please call the roll.
Barnard? No. Bebout? No. Burns? No. Case?
No.
Christensen?
No.
Coe?
No.
Cooper?
No.
Dockstader?
No.
Driscoll?
No.
Emmerich?
No.
Esquivel?
No.
Geis?
No.
Hastert?
No.
Hicks?
No.
Hines?
No.
Jennings?
No.
Johnson?
No.
Landon?
No.
Martin?
No.
Meyer?
No.
Nicholas?
No.
Nutting?
No.
Perkins?
No.
Peterson?
No.
Ross?
No.
Rothfuss?
No.
Schiffer?
No.
Scott?
No.
Von Flatern?
No.
President Anderson?
No.
Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 30 no's.
By your vote, you have failed to concur on Senate File 146. Senator Nicholas, the Joint Conference Committee I've appointed is Nicholas, Jennings, Esquivel. I think that enrolled acts. Senate Enrolled Act 50.
Senate Enrolled Act 50 being original Senate File 150.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 50, original Senate File 150. I have so signed. Senate Enrolled Act number 51.
Senate Enrolled Act number 51 being original Senate File 62.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 51, original Senate File 62. I have so signed. Senate Enrolled Act 52.
Senate Enrolled Act number 52 being original Senate File 65.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 52, original Senate File 65. Have so signed. Senate Enrolled Act 53.
Senate Enrolled Act number 53, bring original Senate File 115.
I'm about to sign Senate Enrolled Act 53, original Senate File 115. As so signed, Joint Conference Committee appointments. In regard to House Bill 8, Wyoming Traditional Food Act, original message number 391, I would appoint Senator Geis, Senator Driscoll, Senator Rothfuss. In regard to original House Bill 20, message number 391, services, I would appoint Scott, Nutting, and Perkins. In regard to House Bill 88, message number 395, having to do with guides and outfitters, I would appoint Coe, Hicks, and Martin. Reports from standing committees.
February the 22nd, 2011, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 23, engrossed, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Hastert, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, Von Fladeren, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
I've just been handed another having to do with health insurance exchanges. I would appoint Scott, Nutting, and Jennings. Scott, Nutting, and Jennings. And I believe that does clear the desk, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Yes, Senator Nutting, go ahead.
Yeah, the privilege of the floor.
You may.
After Senator Busso's building us up about what a great team we were for the Relay for Life races every year, I want to mention I haven't gotten back everybody's pledge sheets for that, so if anybody has more of them to give to me, I'd accept those so we can keep our reputation of being such a great team. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Senator Nutting.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate stand adjourned until 9:30 tomorrow morning, February, 24th.
Announcements. Thank you. Senator Geis, go ahead.
President, anyway, we're at your Ag Committee, Public Land Water Resources, will meet with Pat Terrell tomorrow upon adjournment.
Okay. Go ahead, Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals, will meet tomorrow morning starting at 8 o'clock in Remo Room 302 for confirmation hearings. And we will continue those hearings, Mr. President, at noon starting at 12:15, but we will move to Room S-18.
Senator Perkins.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 1, Judiciary, will meet on Friday, February the 25th at 8 a.m. in Room S1 for Senate confirmations hearings at 8 o'clock for Steve Corsi to the Department of Department of Family Services Director, 8:30, Edward Wright to the position of Board of Parole, and 9 a.m. to Greg Phillips to the position.
Mr. President, the Conference Committee on the Budget, the Appropriations Committee, I'd like to meet right after we adjourn here just to talk a little bit about where we are and where we're going, and then the conference committee will continue to work on the conference with the Senate or with the House upon the House adjournment in the JAC room.
Schiffer, go ahead.
Committee number 8, Transportation, will meet at 4:21 up in S-14 to take up House Bill 194 engrossed, next of kin driver's license option, and House Bill 207 engrossed, protection of activities in private vehicles.
Senator Hines.
Mr. President, your Revenue Committee will meet Friday morning at 8 a.m. to consider the appointments to the State Board of Equalization.
Thank you. Senator Case.
Mr. President, we're going to meet tomorrow morning. Committee number 7. That'll be to hear Cynthia Lewis and Ken Vines for PSC and insurance, respectively. That was previously announced. We'll also meet at 7:45 on Friday, just before the Revenue Committee meets, so we can squeeze in Lanny Applegate for the fire marshal.
Other announcements? Seeing none, the motion was that the Senate stand adjourned until 9:30 a.m. tomorrow morning, February 24th. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. We stand adjourned until 9:30 tomorrow morning.